Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
This week, the big story will mark 3 straight months of producing the show from our basements and our home offices and kitchen tables and closets. So, I mean, hooray for us. That is a full quarter of a full year. And if I had to guess, I'd bet that it's at least that long again before we're really back making this show in our comfy little studios in downtown Toronto. But whether it's this fall or not until 2021, whenever we get a vaccine or whenever the province that we live in figures out how to get the COVID-19 numbers down and keep them down, going back to the office will eventually be an option for us and just about everybody else lucky enough to have a steady office job. However, if you ask the experts, there is no way that the office will mean what it once did. There's no way all of us will return to the office 5 days a week, 9 to 5 every day. First of all, right now, and for the immediate future, that's just unsafe and unnecessary. But also, we're learning a lot during this time. We're learning who really needs the office and who doesn't. Who is more productive from home and who can't be. Who works best at what time of day and on which days of the week? And as we all try to figure out who goes back when, or if, in some cases, if anyone goes back ever, each company will have a choice to make. A few of them have already made it. The knowledge that they've gathered over the past few months might inform some of it, but these months have hardly been under normal conditions. So what do we know about remote work and productivity when there isn't a pandemic? Has anyone studied this, and how do they measure productivity outside of the workplace? What does the ideal makeup of a work week look like if you remove the office as a full-time must for everyone? Well, I am glad you asked. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Nicholas Bloom is a professor of economics at Stanford University. He's also the co-director of the Productivity, Innovation, and Entrepreneurship Program at the National Bureau of Economic Research in the United States. Hi, Nick.
Hi, good morning.
My first question for you is, tell me what we know about productivity and working from home in normal times, because you've done studies on this.
Yes, so I looked at working from home before COVID, you know, and you're right to ask about normal times, because during COVID, you know, working from home is actually pretty horrible. But before COVID, I actually ran what's called a randomized control trial. So we persuaded a large Chinese firm called Ctrip, which is like a travel agency. It's like their version of Expedia. In fact, it's quoted on NASDAQ. It's worth, what, $15 billion. So it's a really huge company. And they wanted to roll out working from home in their Shanghai headquarters to save an office space. And we worked with them to persuade them to set it up as a proper experiment. So they took 1,000 people that had volunteered and they randomized them on even and odd birthdays. So they just drew a ping pong ball from an urn and it said even. So everyone that was even got to work from home for the next 9 months, and the odd were the control and they stayed in the office. So we wanted to investigate it very much in the same way that, you know, the FDA would analyze or investigate new drugs.
And what did you end up finding?
Well, there were 3 key findings. The first was kind of amazing, actually, in that we expected, the firm's view was, look, you send people to work from home, they'll save a bunch in office space, but they're just going to goof off. So, you know, the fear was they'd watch the Chinese version of Oprah Winfrey or play computer games or start their own business or something like that. But in fact, they found that productivity increased by 13%, which is enormous. So these people were making telephone calls, taking bookings. So a 13%, so you could measure their productivity really well. And a 13% increase, that's like a whole extra day a week. I mean, that was huge and astounding to the whole team involved in this. And in fact, Even more impressive is at the end of the 9-month experiment, we allowed people to choose whether they stayed at home or came back into the office. And what you found then is, you know, there are a bunch of people that basically didn't like it working from home. They said they were lonely, it's very depressing, or they fell victim to one of the three great enemies of working from home, the bed, the fridge, or the television. And so they said, look, it just doesn't work for me. And they wanted to come back into the office. So if you looked at those who remained, their productivity, those that liked working from home, increased by over 20%. So before COVID, with good conditions, you know, so no kids, proper working internet, your own room, working from home can generate an enormous productivity increase. So that was the first key finding. The second was the workers actually really loved working from home. So quit rates halved. So, you know, they C-Trip was seeing turnover of about 50% a year, which is very standard, you know, for the US, for Canada, for UK, Australia, etc. But the working from home employees, their quit rates dropped to 25%, which for the firm was an enormous upside because you didn't have to go through all the painful training and retention. And then the final finding was promotion rates, unfortunately, dropped for the working from home employees. So controlling for performance, they dropped by about a half. So rather than getting promoted every 5 years on average, they were getting promoted roughly every 10 years on average.
So if that's what happens when you run just a random experiment during normal times, what would the pandemic change about those results, or change about the process even?
Well, the COVID pandemic is like horrible for working at home. I'm sure your listeners are aware of this, but you know, there's like four big problems with it. So one is kids. I have four kids. And you know, like, I hope not, but like any second, my 4-year-old may like burst into the room. And so she repeatedly comes in. Her nickname for me is Doo-Doo. So she'll come in and say like, you know, Doo-Doo, it's time to play, or I'm bored, or, you know, let's bounce around. And she's very cute, so it's hard to say no. But so kids, the number of people I've spoken to have kids, you know, running around the place.
Yes.
So that's, you know, in C-Trip, every firm I've spoken to before, I did lots of research over the years, no firm would allow you to work from home with kids. It's a total no-no. Whereas now, I know in the US that something like 60% of wages are earned in households with kids under the age of 18. So, you know, I'd say about half of us have kids at home.
Listen, the reason we're recording this right now is because it's my daughter's nap time, so I know it'll be quiet.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard it earlier, but my wife and my, you know, my two daughters just came in through the front door. I was like, can you hear that? I don't know, but there was... So one is kids. The second is just facilities. So I've been running surveys, but something like 40% of Americans are not able to have their own room to work in.
Right.
And of them, about half of them, you know, in their bedroom, which really isn't great. I mean, for anyone that's working in their bedroom, it's a pretty depressing existence. And the other half are in like shared rooms and living rooms. So that's another big issue, or, you know, computer equipment. In fact, I'm working on my backup laptop because my main laptop I dropped coming in from the garden and it smashed. So, you know, so the second is facilities. The third is choice. So I mentioned in C-Trip, and in fact, good surveys from Gartner's, from current North American, you know, Americans and Canadians, that roughly only 50% of people actually want to work from home. And a large reason is only about half of us can work from home. So if you look across the job spectrum, you know, office jobs for the, you know, folks like us, like researchers or journalists, etc., it's fine. But for a lot of jobs in retail, factories, you know, dentists, there's various people that can't. So that's the third problem. And then the final issue is on full time. So before COVID, working from full time was extremely rare. So if you look in the US, it was only 2% of people did that. And having spoken to a lot of them, it was like weird things. So they'd say, you know, my wife, she got a job in Cleveland. I wanted to stay with my current employer. So we moved, but I decided to move working from home. It was basically total outliers. Whereas now we're all cooped up at home for 5 days a week. So as a result, working from home under COVID is not great. I don't want anyone to take, you know, the inference that this isn't great and don't do it, because post-COVID, I think it can be fantastic. It's just, you know, right now it's pretty unpleasant.
So, well, that's kind of why we wanted to talk to you, because right now, you know, it's been 2 months, approaching three, and we're nowhere near post-COVID, but kind of settling into the new normal that everyone talks about. And it looks like a lot of people will be doing this, if not for many more months, then for even longer than that. And if somebody is looking at that situation, and let's say they do have those four challenges that you mentioned, how do they wrap their heads around making that transition? Do we know anything about what would make it easier for them?
Yeah. So, you know, a few things. One is we're going to see a huge long run increase in working from home. So just to give you some numbers, before COVID, about 5% of working days were spent at home. During COVID, it's now about 40%. And post-COVID, having surveyed, you know, thousands of firms, they're looking at something like an average 20%. So working from home is going to go up about fourfold. Post-COVID, I think it's not going to look anything like it is now, because one, there won't be kids around. Well, you know, the kids will go back to school. Two, we're going to be able to schedule and organize ourselves a bit better to have our own rooms, get proper equipment. And third, I think the key thing is it's going to be part-time. So the tips and advice, you know, from talking to lots of HR managers and firms is you want to look at something like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I'm in the office. I'm there every week, the same day. So is my team, so that we know we're together. We can have lunches and meetings and breakout rooms and coffees, etc. And then Tuesdays, Thursdays, I work from home. You know, it's my quiet time. Typically, none of the quiet report writing or analysis or emails is so urgent it can't wait a day. And that seems to work really well. You get to see your colleagues and hang out, but you get to roughly halve the number of times you commute each week, and you get, you know, some peace and quiet. So that's how I see things heading. You know, between now and then, I mean, as you mentioned, there's lots of, you know, news coverage of, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, all kinds of companies are going to roll out working from home. And I see that we're slowly re-enter the workforce. I mean, just for example, Stanford has said, in a month or two, they're going to allow people to go back in the office, but there's you have to wear masks and have testing and contacting and, you know, daily temperature checks. And so I guess a lot of people won't want to go back under those circumstances, but slowly we'll filter back in.
Well, when you talk about the office being a part-time place, I can see the benefit in that to the workers for sure. I mean, that's one thing that even our team, who are all working from home right now, have talked about. But what about the companies that see this as an opportunity, you know, like the one that you ran your study for, to eliminate some of that expensive downtown office space and get their employees working from home? If it's going to become permanent, what do they need to be doing? You know, what responsibility, I guess, do those employers have to the employees that they're now going to tell not to come back to the office?
You know, I don't think you said there's two thoughts. One is I don't think the total amount of office space is actually going to change that much. So coming back to my figures, let's just go through the numbers. So before COVID, we had 5% of days working from home. So 95% were out of home. You know, about half of that's in the office. Half is in other things like shops and factories, etc. Post-COVID, we're down to 80%. So then you think, well, so we've gone from 95 to 80% of days, and there's, of course, going to be a drop in the demand for office space, etc. But the other thing to bear in mind is we're going to have a lot more social distancing. And the figures I've seen kicking around is something like halving the density in typical offices, and that's going to be a, you know, a long run thing. And so if you add that halving the density thing, oh, wait a minute, no, maybe we're actually going to need more office space, because, you know, much of, you think of Toronto and New York and San Francisco, a lot of the downtown is these very tall, dense skyscrapers. And it, you know, we can't go back to anywhere near the density we put in because of issues around, you know, elevators and mass transit and just toilets and entranceways. So I don't think actually the total amount of office space is going to be changed that much. Because if we're going to be coming into work 2-3 days a week, we need an office. And it really doesn't seem to work, people working from home full-time for extended periods. What I think you will see is a move away from city centers to more suburbs. So kind of a reversal of the focus on skyscrapers and downtowns and back to, you know, industrial parks. And if you've seen the TV show The Office, I mean, something that looks more like that. And so some people like it, some loathe it. But I think we're going to move back, you know, it's going to be back to the 1980s. You know, it's like back to the 80s and 90s at the rise of the office park and, you know, away from shiny glass towers in the center of downtown cities that are going to have to really empty out.
That's really fascinating. And I'll kind of ask you the same question in a bit of a different way then, because I'm really interested in the economics behind this. If you're going to either keep the same office space or move or whatever, but your employees are going to be, you know, coming into the office in shifts so that they can be more distant from each other, et cetera, and working 2 or 3 days from home and 2 or 3 days in the office, what do you have to give those employees to keep their productivity high enough for that to be, you know, a good investment for you? Like, do we need to buy them chairs, computers, invest a little bit in their rent? Like, how does that work?
You know, again, I think by the time we go, I mean, sure, right now you want to make sure that everyone has laptops and broadbands. And from talking to a bunch of companies, there are schemes, interestingly enough, less, you know, in Canada and the US, and more actually, and I've talked to firms with employees in developing countries where they bought them, you know, broadband connectivity and laptops. I actually talked to a company that had a lot of employees out in the Philippines and Indonesia and said, like, you know, virtually no one has a home computer or broadband. So it was expensive to equip them. But, you know, by now, almost all of us have a computer at home, or if not, you know, the firm can get it. It's not that much money. So I think getting us set up and working at home is actually reasonably straightforward. And, you know, it's kind of happening by default. And we tend to be more productive. So I don't think there's anything the firm needs to, in a sense, compensate employees. Generally, most people really want to work from home part time. They want a bit more peace and quiet, but they quite like seeing their colleagues. So that I see is kind of the promised land of post COVID, that something we've long wanted to do, but there's been all this stigma. So before COVID,
yeah,
words like, you know, shirking from home or working remotely working, that stigma is just evaporated. I mean, it has disappeared completely. And so post COVID, one of the few silver linings out of this is going to be a transformation in a much more pleasant and productive way to work, where we're part in the office and part at home. But as I said, I don't think that's going to save a lot of office space, certainly not out in, you know, office parks, etc.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
I want to go back to your study and your work from the beginning, and you kind of touched on promotion rate. What do we know about what working from home does in the big picture in terms of, you know, who gets ahead, who falls behind, who does get those promotions, who adapts well and who doesn't?
Yeah, I think full-time working from home comes at a cost in promotion. So in C-Trip, we saw promotion rates roughly halved. So they were working from home 4 out of 5 days a week. And so the final day, they'd all come in at the same time. So that was like the team day when all the meetings would happen. Even so, their promotion rates halved. But I should say, it's not obvious why it halved. So we came across 3 reasons. One is people claim working from home, they're forgotten about, kind of discriminated against, out of sight, out of mind. A second reason is, we heard a bit from the firm. They said, well, look, if you're working from home, you're not really around in the office enough to know what's going on, to know about your colleagues, to know, say, they have any issues, to properly manage them. And so actually, you know, it's harder to promote you because you just don't have the experience. And then the final story we heard, and I actually remember I visited JetBlue, the airline that does a big working from home program out in Salt Lake City. And I visited several people there working from home, and they said, and they were typically, I should say, very educated women with young kids. They said, look, I don't want to be promoted because if I'm promoted, I have to come into the office. So it is true that working from home seems to be associated with lower promotion rates if it's full time. Again, coming back to this post-COVID promised land, I don't think if you're in the office 3 days a week, you're basically forgotten about, particularly if the structure is most of your team is in on those 3 days, because all of the common events and meetings are going to happen then. And you won't, I mean, on the other 2 days you're around, it's just the kind of quiet days for the group whereby people do their reports. So I think part-time is fine, but 4 or 5 days a week, if you do it and everyone else is in the office, I think that is a problem for promotion.
What are we learning right now while we are in this situation about working from home in general, or what we're going to take into the future? Like, this must be a kind of unprecedented experiment for people who study what you do.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm running, like, you know, incredible numbers of surveys. I'm spending much of my day just asking people about working from home, looking from data. For me, I guess there's a couple of big learnings. One is the incredible speed with which everyone has shifted to working from home, and it worked. I mean, We went from 5% to 40% in the space of, 3 weeks. And I would say, it's far from perfect, but most people are able to roughly function working from home. The second factor is how much people seem to like it. So just looking at surveys right now, I mean, we just finished one that, closed yesterday of 2,500 Americans. And there's overwhelming enthusiasm to continue working from home. In fact, what's interesting is I gave you those numbers that currently were 40% of days are working from home. Post-COVID, firms are predicting 20%. If you look at what employees are wanting, they're asking for about 35%. So a lot of employees are wanting more people want to work from home than currently are, but they want to do it part-time. So it seems like, the vast majority of people, their nirvana is something like 2-3 days a week in the office, 2-3 days a week at home. So that I wouldn't, those two factors that we can do it so effectively and that so many people like it would not have been obvious. It was definitely not in the data before COVID, because working from home before COVID is actually pretty rare.
What do we know and what are we finding out about the impact of working from home on people's mental health? And is there any way, if there are negative effects, to mitigate that?
Yes, I mean, I already saw this in C-Trip when you spoke to people that work from home for 4 out of 5 days a week. And remember, they're in the office for 1 day a week and they were going out on the evenings and weekends that they liked. They reported huge levels of loneliness. And those are the people that want to come back in the office. As you say, some older people that married with kids were very happy with it. If you looked at younger people that were single without kids, they felt very oppressed and lonely being at home. Right now, of course, the situation is far worse because we're 5 days a week without any let out on the evenings and weekends. So early on, it was pretty clear there's likely to be a tsunami of mental health issues. And in fact, I was on panel discussion yesterday with David. One of the people on it was David Katz, who's a professor, a medical doctor in Yale, and was talking about anecdotal evidence that's coming out already for tick ups in suicide rates and other mental health issues, abuse, home child abuse, domestic abuse. So yes, I think that is a big issue. Again, I think it's why I'm against full time working from home, because people get very cooped up and it has all kinds of horrible, impacts, both mentally and both on mental and physical health. So as soon as we can, it would be great to get back to at least part-time being in the office.
Do you have any recommendations for what people who are experiencing that kind of loneliness and need for connection can do well? Because obviously the situation's probably not changing in the near term. Is there anything about the process of working from home that you can change to help yourself?
Yes, there's two or three things you can do that certainly help. So one of them is, for a start, trying to convert anything that's previously a telephone call to a video call and turning the video on and turning the mute on. But I mean, Zoom, whatever, Google Hangout, whatever you use, they don't work that well in big meetings. So there's 20 of you. It's not, I wouldn't say it's very sociable, but for two or three people, they can actually be pretty good. And, they're not the same as meeting in person, but certainly if you've got the video and the sound on, there's some kind of connectivity. That's one thing to do. The second is, for example, I do that with my research group, Zoom is very transactional. So try and deliberately set aside a certain amount of time each meeting just to have social discussion. So my research group meets every Friday for an hour, and we used to have a presentation for an hour, but of course people would arrive a bit early and walk out late in their chat. If you just allow the hour on Zoom, that never happens. So now we explicitly start the presentation 15 minutes late. And the first 15 minutes, we just go around, each person gives, sometimes one sentence, sometimes several sentences about how they're doing. We're learning a lot about people's gardening, their cooking. Somebody's really into puzzles. Someone else telling us about Lego. Someone else, my weird personal things, I've been getting into juggling soccer ball. My daughter's very into soccer. And in fact, one of my grad students said, he just managed to get 500 juggles. I was like, oh, that's great. I've been working on it too, but that kind of reconnects. And then finally, for managers, I've heard from several managers, they actually try and set out time each day to connect in person with their employees. So I've actually, again, been doing that with my students, whereby I have a rota that every other week I spend 20 minutes talking to them individually. And, the first part of that, again, is social stuff, non-work stuff, checking they're okay. Even, have you had a haircut? I mean, some of this stuff it seems a bit ridiculous, but I think we have to deliberately force it. Things that will naturally happen in the office, like you'd notice somebody was their head in their hands at their desk or seem really down, unless you set aside a bit of time on Zoom deliberately to discuss with them, that doesn't happen. So we just have to be deliberate about reaching out.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for this advice. And I really hope that we get to this nirvana that you've told us exists at the end of this.
Yes. I mean, it's like, it's the thing that's holding us all together. I mean, I feel really lonely. I want to, you know, I'm married with kids, so I have my family here, but I honestly really miss my colleagues. I'd love to see them. I miss going out. There's so many people I, you know, talk to remotely. I would love to be back at work 2-3 days a week. 2-3 days a week, that's like enough. You know, I'm happy spending a lot of my time at home, but it feels so cooped up. But I think that's where we're going to head. I think in the one of the few benefits of the COVID pandemic is we're just going to have a much better work-life structure, you know, once this is over, which I guess is, you know, late 2021 or 2022 onwards.
Well, it's good to have light at the end of the tunnel. So thanks again.
Thanks, Jordan.
Nicholas Bloom, a professor of economics at Stanford University. That was The Big Story. If you want more big stories, they are in the same place they always are, on our website, thebigstorypodcast.ca, and we are in the same place we always are. I don't just mean at home. I mean on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN and via email, thebigstorypodcast, all one word, at rci.rogers.com. And we never move from our position in your podcast player. You can look us up in any one you choose if it lets you. Leave us a rating, leave us a review, let us know what you think and what we should cover, because we're always looking for ideas. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.